The G20 summit gets underway in India. What does it mean for Ukraine?
Leaders began arriving in New Delhi on Friday for the annual gathering, as negotiators struggle to bridge differences over the war in Ukraine, seeking to build consensus for the successful summit that India wants.
Plus, President Volodymyr Zelensky's hometown attacked.
The missile hit the administrative buildings, including the building where the local office of the police office was located.
And later in the program, U.S. presidential candidate Nikki Haley's views on aid to Kyiv, a look at elections in occupied territories, and a Ukrainian politician turned drone commander. Today is Friday, September 8th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. We'll survey the damage in President Zelensky's hometown in just a moment. Up first, though, a look ahead at the G20 summit in India. Leaders of the group of 20 major economies began arriving in New Delhi on Friday for their annual gathering with the announcement that the leaders' declaration is almost ready. That suggests that negotiators have made progress in bridging differences in the group over the war in Ukraine. Reuters' Fiona Jones reports.
Our New Delhi leaders' declaration is almost ready.
India's G20 chair announced on Friday that the leaders' statement is almost ready to be presented to those attending the weekend summit. India, which holds the rotating presidency of the group of 20 major economies, is hosting the event. And a consensus on the final document is key to its success. Leaders began arriving in New Delhi on Friday for the annual gathering, as negotiators struggled to bridge differences over the war in Ukraine, seeking to build consensus for the successful summit that India wants. In preparation, the bustling city of 20 million has been brought to a standstill. City authorities have demolished slums, and monkeys and stray dogs have been removed from the streets. Markets, stores and restaurants were shut, schools were closed and traffic restricted. Shopkeepers have told local newspapers that they would lose about $48 million because of the three-day closure. But the gathering risks being derailed by deep and entrenched divisions over Russia's war, hurting progress on issues such as food security, debt distress, and cooperation on climate change. It is also expected to be dominated by the West and its allies. Russia's Vladimir Putin won't be at the summit, with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov attending instead. And China's Xi Jinping is also skipping the meeting, with Premier Li Qiang going in his place. The hardened stance on the Ukraine conflict has prevented agreement on even a single communique at the ministerial meetings during India's G20 presidency so far this year. It is left to the leaders, if possible, to find a way around and present a united statement. Sources told Reuters the main sticking point is the language in the leaders' declaration on the war. Western countries want a strong condemnation of the invasion as a condition for agreeing to a Delhi declaration. India has suggested that the G20, while condemning the suffering caused by Russia's invasion, also reflect Moscow and Beijing's view that the forum is not the place for geopolitics.
We also remain committed to support for Ukraine.
US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said Washington is willing to work with India to help craft a joint statement, but it would be a challenge. European Council President Charles Michel echoed that view.
That's Reuters' Fiona Jones with that story. Meanwhile, in central Ukraine, a Russian missile attack on President Volodymyr Zelensky's hometown has killed one policeman and injured more than 40 others. AP correspondent Charles Della Desma has that story.
A Russian missile attack on President Volodymyr Zelensky's hometown in central Ukraine has killed at least one policeman and injured over 40 others. It was among multiple Russian attacks across the country overnight. Officials say 10 buildings were damaged in the attack on Kryvyi Rih. Ukraine's Minister of Internal Affairs says 3 of the people who were pulled out of the rubble are in serious condition. He posted photos on Telegram showing a building on fire and emergency services evacuating the injured. 3 people were also injured in a Russian missile attack in the eastern city of Sumy. Officials add Russian forces forces also struck the Odessa region in the west with drones for the fifth time in a week. No casualties were reported there. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Voting is underway on Friday in Russian-controlled regions of southern and eastern Ukraine, including the city of Donetsk. Russian-installed authorities in the Ukrainian regions of Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson, which Moscow unilaterally declared as its own territory last September, are holding regional polls that mirror elections being held in Russia. Natalia Kravchenko is deputy chairperson of a local polling station.
Our residents, those living in our small district, have been quite active in terms of voting, despite the rather difficult situation here. But people are waiting. People wanted to vote. For the next 3 days, until Sunday, September 10th, voting will take place at this polling station.
The elections in Russia-controlled areas of Ukraine have been widely condemned by Kyiv and its allies. In Russia, voters began voting on Friday in 3 days of tightly controlled regional and local elections that are likely to be interpreted by authorities as a vote of confidence for Russian President Vladimir Putin. Governors, including Moscow's powerful mayor, are up for election in 21 of Russia's regions from Siberia to the Black Sea coast. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said it is difficult to overstate the importance of this round of elections. The Pentagon is pushing back against Russian criticism of the U.S. move to give uranium-based ammunition to Ukraine. The AP's Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports.
Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov calls the decision very bad news, claiming U.S. use of the depleted uranium ammunition elsewhere led to a big rise in cancers and other illnesses at the Pentagon.
The CDC has stated that there is no evidence that the depleted uranium rounds cause cancer.
Spokeswoman Sabrina Singh says militaries around the world use the extremely dense ammo, which the U.S. developed during the Cold War to destroy Soviet tanks.
Penetrates the conventional armor better than regular munitions.
But Austrian weapons expert Ilyana Sokova says the new rounds still won't be a game changer.
To me, it's just another piece of metal in the arsenal.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. A look at elections in occupied territories and an update from President Zelensky's hometown. I'm joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Today in the morning, a big part of Ukraine was under air raid alarm, and Kyiv, including Kyiv. However, in Kyiv, this alarm was quite short, and the main attack was targeting the city of Kryvyi Rih. It's not the first such tragic attack and such huge attack with such consequences. Today, it was quite bad as well. What we know from the rescue authorities and local authorities that the shelling targeted the administrative and as well as residential area of the city, not far away from the city center. For now, we already have confirmation that rescue operation was done, was over. In total, one person was confirmed killed and 59 people were confirmed injured. We know that the missile hit the administrative buildings, including the building where the local office of the police office was located. This attack damaged a lot of residential buildings.
Now, I understand that Kryvyi Rih is President Zelensky's hometown. Is there a strategic reason or a military target in town that the Russians would be targeting, or is this seen as largely a symbolic attack on Zelensky's hometown?
Well, it's I don't think it's a symbolic attack because, yes, this is the hometown of President Zelensky, but still Kryvyi Rih is a very important town in terms of industrial production. It has a huge industrial area, and in general, the city is considered in Ukraine as an industrial city. So, this city is definitely important for Ukrainian economy. So, this is probably one of the reasons. Also, answering your question regarding military targets, definitely this city is located in Dnipropetrovsk region. So, it is considered close to front line. And definitely there is military present in the city, as in any city in Ukraine right now. But today's attack was not targeting particularly the military targets, any military targets. At least nothing was under attack, but administrative area and particularly police office.
Changing gears slightly, today elections start in the Russian-occupied parts of Ukrainian territory. What's the reaction in Kyiv been to this?
Definitely, Ukrainian reaction is negative, and Ukraine, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, made a statement: Ukraine will not recognize this so-called elections, as Ministry of Foreign Affairs highlight these elections. Also, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs calls on partners and Ukrainian allies not to recognize these elections as well, and to introduce new sanctions on Russia because of that. Antony Blinken, during his visit to Ukraine, also commented on these elections, and he called these elections fictional and as he said, another act of Russian propaganda. As well as the European Union also condemned these elections, and also the EU speaker Peter Stano said that these elections would not be recognized by the European Union. So this is something that Russian Federation is doing again, but this time is not only Crimea and Luhansk and Donetsk occupied areas, but also Zaporizhia occupied area and Kherson occupied area.
It's no surprise that Ukrainian authorities and other Western authorities wouldn't recognize the elections and wouldn't see them as legitimate. Elections are also being held throughout Russia. I'm wondering if in Kyiv there is any sense that the elections in Russia would be free and fair and that a change might be coming to Russia.
You know, I should say that in Ukraine, Russian political system in general considered as a fake one in terms of elections. So no one really believes that these elections are free and independent, and the results are considered already known, so no changes are expected. And I don't really think that this is a top topic for discussion in Ukraine. So no one is really expecting any changes to happen in this country.
And we'll leave it there for today. That's Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
We meet a Kyiv politician turned drone squadron commander in a few minutes. Now, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, are pledging deeper economic cooperation as the list of international sanctions on Russia grows. The leader's commitment to strengthen ties, analysts say, will likely dash hopes among Turkey's Western allies of a growing rift between Erdogan and Putin. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Russian President Vladimir Putin pledged to increase cooperation from energy to tourism to foreign aid in their September the 4th summit at Russia's Black Sea Resort of Sochi. Relations between the leaders had been cooling after Erdogan angered Moscow with his support for Ukraine's bid for NATO membership. But analysts say the outcome of the Sochi summit is a strong sign the Russian leader cannot afford to downscale relations with Erdogan. Columnist Ilhan Ulusoy for Turkey's Kısadalga news portal.
Putin cannot face losing Erdogan. I mean, that's for sure. They don't care about what Erdogan is doing in his ties with Western countries and Western institutions. They're more interested in what kind of a cooperation they can do with Erdogan, and they make cooperation in many areas.
Russian officials confirmed Wednesday that Turkey will participate with Russia and Qatar to supply 1 million metric tons of grain to 6 African countries. Under the agreement, Turkey would process the grain into flour. Turkey would also receive grain from Russia for its own market. But analysts warned that Moscow could use the deal to export stolen Ukrainian grain, breaching international sanctions and adding to broader concerns over Turkey's refusal to enforce sanctions against Russia. With sanctions getting tighter, analysts say Turkey's becoming even more important to Russia. George Voloshin is with ACAMS, a financial crime watchdog.
There are many intermediaries in Turkey that help Russian interests, that help Russia procure goods from the West, including, you know, basic goods as well as very sensitive goods.
At Monday's Sochi summit, Putin and Erdogan also committed themselves to increasing bilateral trade from $70 to $100 billion, including turning Turkey into a regional hub for distributing Russian gas. However, some observers say such a move would undermine efforts by Turkey's Western allies to shut Russian energy out of international markets. The Russian and Turkish leaders at Sochi also discussed Russian companies' plans to build a second nuclear reactor in Turkey. Zal Gazimov is a professor of history and a specialist on Russia at Bonn University.
The Sochi meeting definitely demonstrated that the interaction grew between two sides, between Russia and Turkey, and both sides are in a certain way indispensable for each other. They continue to cooperate, they continue to interact, and the number of chapters in that book of cooperation between Moscow and Ankara grew tremendously.
Deepening economic cooperation between Russia and Turkey, some analysts say, threatens to strain Ankara's ties with its Western allies as they seek to isolate Moscow and will likely dash their hopes of a break in Erdogan's close relationship with Putin. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
America's Republican Party remains divided on aid to Ukraine. During a previous program, we heard from 2024 presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy on why he opposes aiding Kyiv. Today, we hear from Nikki Haley. She's one of Ramaswamy's competitors in the 2024 race and a former UN ambassador. She explains why the U.S. should support Ukraine against Russia.
I want Americans to have all the facts. I want them to know why a win for Russia is a win for China. I want them to know that we all want a short war. We don't want a long war. I want them to know that I don't think we need to give cash to Ukraine. I don't think we need to put troops on the ground. But we need them to have the equipment and the ammunition to win. I want them to know that of everything we've spent in the Ukraine, only 3.5% of our defense budget. That's it. All in the name of preventing war. I want them to know that percentage of GDP, there are 11 European countries spending more than us. That's a small price to pay to prevent war, to prevent people like my husband to have to go and fight in a war that we don't want him to have to fight in. And when they realize that if Russia takes Ukraine, then Poland and the Baltics are next, and then we are in war because those are NATO countries, then they understand that this is about preventing war. And I will always talk about prevention of war. And if Ukraine wins, it sends the biggest message to China not to go into Taiwan. The one thing that Russia and China were so fearful of when I was at the United Nations was a strong military. We need to build up our military so strong that they never want to touch it. We need to let China know that there'll be hell to pay if they touch Taiwan. So are we going to defend Taiwan? We will do whatever we need to defend our friend the way we're defending Ukraine. And look at the fact Taiwan wants us to defend Ukraine. Why does Taiwan want us to defend Ukraine? Because they know that if Ukraine wins, China walks away and doesn't invade Taiwan. That's why there is a consensus among free democracies to make sure that we finish this, that we finish it quickly, and we send a message to the enemies that want to destroy us.
That's 2024 presidential candidate and former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley. Finally today, before the war, Yuri Fedorenko was working full-time as a Kyiv City Council deputy. Today, he's fighting against Russian forces in Donbas as the commander of an attack drone squadron. Anna Kostachenko has his story.
32-year-old Yuri Fedorenko got his call sign Achilles thanks to his comrades. Back then, in March 2022, he was defending Kyiv and Zhytomyr region from Russian forces.
We were fighting back. We followed orders, but we did so in the way that we saw fit.
Fedorenko was born in a small village in Ukraine's Cherkasy region. Later, he moved to Kyiv, and in 2009, he enlisted in Ukraine's National Guard as a Special Forces Combat Instructor. In 2014, Fedorenko headed to eastern Ukraine to fight in the anti-terrorist operation against Russia-backed separatists. He was wounded in the head, which forced him to return to civil life.
In 2015, I was discharged from the army for health reasons, with a note saying I was partially fit to fight during wartime. So, I started a car business.
In 2019, Fedorenko started his political career as an advisor to the Defense Committee of the Verkhovna Rada of Ukraine. In 2020, he joined the Kyiv City Council as a deputy.
Kyiv residents trusted me to represent their interests in the Kyiv City Council. Now I can visit Kyiv only once every 2 to 3 months to join the most important sessions in the Council.
On the day Russia invaded Ukraine in late February 2022, Fedorenko rejoined the army. As commander of a rifle company, he defended the Kyiv region and later took part in the Kharkiv counteroffensive.
Let's go!
During the liberation of the Kharkiv region, Fedorenko suggested the command use civilian drones for military reconnaissance for the first time.
As we flew the drone, we could send the coordinates to the artillery unit. We worked like that from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then our forces started an offensive. We managed to eliminate the enemy's equipment and prevent them from using their reserves.
In the summer of 2022, Fedorenko became commander of his attack drone squadron. And after the Kharkiv counteroffensive, headed to Donbas to continue fighting.
We're on the Bakhmut direction, and this drone just got back from its mission after having dropped a bomb directly on the head of the occupiers.
When Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky visited the Donbas region in August 2023, Yuri Fedorenko was awarded the Order of Bohdan Khmelnytsky for the defense of the motherland. Anna Kostyuchenko, VOA News.
And that'll
Donetsk
do it for
region,
us today.
Ukraine.
Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.